at the Indian Rights Association as well, the Seneca Indian. We'll be talking with them in just a moment and see what their problems are, what they're doing to solve those problems, and how all this affects the two of us, all right? Okay, you stay around for it, will you?
Hello, I'm Guy Pascal. My claim to fame is the invention of Airwick liquid air freshener.
Hetzel, he's the General Secretary of the Indian Rights Association, and Mrs. Betty Maley, is it?
Betty Maley, yes.
Betty, it's good to have you with us. Dr. Hetzel, as I mentioned earlier, he's the General Secretary of the Indian Rights Association, and Betty is a member of the Board of Directors of the Indian Rights Association, and she's a Seneca Indian. I've been reading lately, there's been all sorts of problems related to Indians, and I thought perhaps we could get into this a bit. But first, what exactly does the Indian Rights Association do?
I think I'd like Ted to take that question.
All
He's
right.
been a longer...
Well, we maintain an office in Philadelphia and send out...
We're having a little problem with the radio. All right. Now, what do they...
We maintain an office in Philadelphia and issue publications, Indian Truth, periodically, a pamphlet about Indian facts and figures, and a map of Indian reservations, which are sent to school teachers. And recently, by mistake, we've got into a publication of much wider distribution. And yesterday we got 700 application requests for this information.
Is that right?
Which we send out to as much as we have manpower and publications for. And then we speak to schools and colleges and churches about current Indian affairs, attend hearings in Washington to... present our viewpoint and the viewpoint as we understand it from Indians on current legislation and hearings before Senate and House subcommittees, policy matters. Also has some representation at the state level. Indians are becoming more vocal locally and recognize opportunities for use of federal funds which are allocated for the purpose for Indians and see to it that they get what's coming to them.
Well, I think I've never met anybody that that could see anything good, certainly, could see anything good as far as the many injustices that have been perpetrated against our Indian population. And right now, I mean, you hear the stories of the Indians. Now, I've never seen it. I frankly never have. I've never witnessed some of the problems that they're undergoing, the problems on the reservations, the problems with land that the Indians think they justly deserve themselves simply because it was their land and because of mistreatment, misinterpretation, or going back on certain treaties that were made with the United States government, and they want this land back. And what's going on as far as that's concerned?
Oh, a great many things in a great many places. Hunting and fishing rights in various Indian reservations or in land that was previously Indian land, which by treaty they have the rights to hunt and fish on. There are water rights that are by rights theirs, but are usurped by federal agencies and by local white people. There is some land in Upper New York State being occupied now by Indians, which is not occupied by any white people. It's in the Adirondack Forest Preserve, and the Indians think by legal right reverts to them if it's not otherwise used, and it was illegally sold in the first place. So it's sort of a standoff there. They, by their legalities and by the treaties as they still exist, they deal not with the local sheriff and not with the state authorities, but with the President of the United States or his lieutenant. And that's what they're insisting on. They insist that their dealings be with the United States, as the treaty says. And there are quite a number of other places. Recently, it was at Gresham, Wisconsin,
yes.
The occupation of Alexian Brothers Abbey. There again, they say this was trust land taken for the purposes of the church, and the church has now abandoned it and hasn't occupied it for 10 years or so, and by legal right, it should revert to them.
Yes, but by going in and occupying this this ground, which is in effect, I guess, is considered by government as an illegal way of doing it, couldn't they go through the courts and establish their rights?
I've been doing that for 10 years and haven't gotten anywhere. Like lots of other frustrations, they end up by militancy.
Yeah, well, I kind of figure I knew the answer to that one.
Well, I think, though, that they have worked through recognized agencies, the Menominee, who are occupying the monastery or whatever it's called at Gresham, Wisconsin, and have worked very successfully through the federal government to get restoration of Menominee Indian rights, their land, and reorganize, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you hear a lot of, you know, well, not a lot, but several of our big personalities in the world of showbiz, and I just thought I'd bring this up because I think it's rather interesting, that thing with Brando. Has he done the Indians any good? I mean, I know he is certainly, as far as informing the average person about the situation, I think he's done a lot, but has he done it well?
I think he's done it well. I think he's been very quiet about it. I think lately that he has been more visible in the Indian movement in order to get the media to pay some attention to Indians. He has to act as a go-between, and of course, media does pay attention to what Marlon Brando is doing.
Yes.
But in the past, he has been very quietly supporting things such as an excellent film made on the fishing rights in the state of Washington. He backed that, and he's generally been backing things that he thought the Indians themselves wanted.
Well, just recently, I know, he decided he would give all his lands to the Indians. Now, he was going to do this. His sister objected to him giving away some land that she owned, I guess, along with him, the old family homestead. She didn't like that particularly. But then I found
that... I think
that
she changed her view on that.
Mind.
Did
yes.
she change her
yes,
mind?
Yes, she came around to agreeing with him.
I wondered, too, about something else. And then I understand that one parcel of land that he had donated had a tremendous mortgage on it.
Yeah, a lot of publicity was given to that. He also says that he's going to pay off that part. I don't know about this.
Well, I think that's very nice. I don't other than being a human being, what his motivation is, maybe is it just the concern for the Indians?
Well, I think the columnists have made quite a thing out of disparaging him. They can write a column on that gets more attention.
Isn't that a shame? I mean, isn't it truly a shame that tries to do good, nobody can believe, people are basic cynics. I mean, that's perhaps a lot of people are at any rate, not all people, certainly. The newspaper people are, and maybe justly so with some of the things they've encountered, but if they feel that Brando is doing this for some alternative motive, I don't know what that could be.
I doubt it.
Well, I question the value of giving land back to the Indians. As an Indian, I... don't think that it's going to be an asset to Indians to get lands that are taxable. This land should through an act of Congress have to be recognized as federally protected land, Indian land.
Yes, well, with Brando, of course, they said he's taken the full tax advantage of most of this property anyway, and now it's just really a burden on him, and he might as well just get rid of it and give it back.
Can't the Indians sell it and use that money to set up whatever it is they really want? They don't necessarily want to use land where he happens to own it.
Well, I suppose they could sell it and buy lands that would be adjacent to their reservations, but the problem, of course, in returning land in any area is that it be returned to an indigenous Indian group and not to some group that comes from another area.
Yes. I'd like to find out some of the other problems involved with the Indians other than the land, because that's been the most talked about, I guess. We'll do that in just a moment or so. Stay tuned.
And now, for British Airways, Mr. Robert Morley.
Once upon a time, there was a couple who were very much in love. Then one day, the breadwinner had to go to London on a business trip. The thought of being separated made them both quite sad. Her husband wanted to go with her, but it was too expensive. So the woman called British Airways and learned about the ExecuPack, a plan that saves business travelers money. For a reasonable sum, she could have her round-trip airfare and 7 nights in an excellent hotel. Best of all, for not much more, she could have her man with her. They could even stay at the Savoy. The couple were delighted, and the husband promised that the next time he had a job and had to go to London on business, he'd take her on British Airways ExecuPack.
Save money and your marriage with ExecuPack. The cost is $488 based on group fares. Add $348 for your spouse, Savoy Hotel Extra. Book 15 days ahead. Departures most days of the week.
The Camden County Probation Department needs volunteers to work with probationers. Training is available. Call 1-609-541-2300. This is John Facenda.
You've got a friend at WCAU. Let me tell you about a great way to start the day. Special Mixture Fruit and Nut. It's the only natural cereal with the goodness of chopped cashews, applesauce, moist, chewy dates, coconut, and tasty orange bits. And just like the other Nature Valley granolas, it's a 100% natural, ready-to-eat cereal. No preservatives. It's all real. Honey-toasted, crisp, crunchy, and delicious, with all the combined textures and tastes of old-fashioned rolled oats, sesame seeds, and brown sugar. Now, if you think that sounds good, wait till you taste new Nature Valley Granola Special Mixture Fruit and Nut. Comes in the golden box. Nature Valley Cinnamon and Raisin comes in the red box. And Honey and Oats in the green box. Nature Valley Granola. Let's continue now with our guests, Dr. Theodore Hetzel and Mrs. Betty Milley. Tell me, how many Indians are there in the United States? I want to just give us an idea of the size of the problem. You know,
I think you could say 1 million. It wouldn't be too far from the proper picture.
Yeah.
About half of them living on federally recognized reservations, and the other half either on state-recognized reservations or in cities or in urban rural communities. Of course, it all depends on what the definition of an Indian is. If anybody who has a drop of Indian blood is an Indian, then there must be 10 or 50 million American Indians.
Yes.
In the United States.
As far as educational opportunities afforded the Indians, are they vast or are they non-existent? Or
better than they used to be, and yeah. I guess there are 10 times as many Indians in college now as there were 10 years ago. So it's increasing, and as more schools are being built closer to home, there are fewer boarding schools. Whereas in the past, not so distant past, children 6 years of age were taken hundreds of miles from home to go to a boarding school and regimented into the white man's life. Nowadays, a few schools now have their own Indian school boards, and more schools are being built. So practically all Indian children can get to school now. That wasn't true not so long ago.
Did the Indian Rights Association have anything to do with that?
Oh, I don't think I can claim that we had a great deal to do with education, except that under Hoover, Charles Rhodes and Henry Scattergood were the commissioner and associate commissioner of Indian Affairs, and they instituted much improved policies with respect to education and were instrumental in implementing some of the Merriam Report, which dealt with Indian problems, but they weren't too effective in putting things through Congress, so there's lots that needs to be done that's pointed out in the Merriam Report that hasn't been done yet. That's
Yes. Well, just so people will realize that the Indian Rights Association is by no means a new organization that has come into being in the last several years. It's been an establishment, I guess, since when? 1882?
82 is correct, yes.
And so they've been around for a while. How did the organization get started?
There were a couple of Philadelphia men who... Well, off for a summer trip, I guess you might say, to South Dakota. I think they were invited by Bishop Hare of the Episcopal Church, and they saw a situation there that the Indians weren't being fed their rations as they were promised to be. They had been herded into a small reservation where they couldn't support themselves, and it was either starve or be fed. And the agents were ripping them off, and they saw that there was a bad situation, and they got other like-minded philanthropic people to join them and founded this organization, which collected quite a bit of money and could hire staff, and they had an office in Washington, influenced legislation at a time when it was legal for such organizations to do that, and they were very helpful to Indians over the years.
I just wanted to find this out because you said that the Indian Rights Association really didn't have too much to do with education and the Indians and the betterment of that condition. What has the Indian Rights Association done for the Indians?
Yeah, well, we have supported the budgets recently at hearings for education. But in the past, it's more related to legislation, land. We helped the Sioux retain 11 million acres of land, which would have been taken away from them by... homesteading, and we've helped the Hualapai and the Southern Utes and the Yuma and the Puyallup and the Paiutes retain their land, and the Navajo Reservation in 100 years ago was much smaller than it is now. It helped expand it to bring it up to the needs of the people more nearly the land that they'd had before they were forced into captivity over 100 years ago. And the Crow Creek and Lower Brule Sioux lands were about to be taken from them completely, and they were all going to be moved over to the Rosebud Sioux Reservation. And the Indian Rights Association stepped in and publicized the problem and worked in Congress and stopped that. And the Osage Indians, who became famous for having oil, would not have had it at all had it not been that when all the reservations in Oklahoma were abolished, the Indian Rights Association somehow wangled it that the subsurface rights for the Osage were retained by the tribe, so that when oil was discovered there, the proceeds from the royalties from that oil did come to the members of the tribe, and they still get payments. It's not as much as it used to be, but still it's a substantial amount of money that comes to Osage Indians from oil. In New Mexico, there was a Burson bill that attempted to get the land away from the Pueblo Indians and give it to the local white people. And that was blocked.
Basically, you've done a lot for them. I mean, there's no question about
that.
That's the basis for the organization.
We helped the Alaskans get reindeer to increase their economy.
Yeah.
We helped the Alaskans get the Native Land Claim Act in favorable to them. Helped establish the Indian Claims Commission, 1946, that tries to compensate Indians for land which is improperly, illegally, unconscionably taken from them. They are not given the land back again, but they're given a payment of the value that's estimated to be the value of the land as of the time it was taken. That is 100 years ago. 50 cents an acre and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And they're not given the interest on the money that was owed them over those years either, but they are given payments, which do come to millions of dollars for land that was illegally taken from them. And, of course, there's a lot that hasn't been adjudicated yet, like the Black Hills. The Indians still say that by treaty and by all legality, the Black Hills still belong to the Sioux, but we've simply taken them from them and taken the gold out and walked off with it.
I think that the Indian Claims Commission has determined that there should be payment for the Black Hills, and it has been established that the Sioux are due this payment. However, there is some question now as to legislation that was passed after the treaty giving them, allocating this territory for them. There is question now as to how these treaties and subsequent payments affect the amount that is due the Sioux for this land.
Well, there is land that the Indians claim is theirs rightfully. However, because of the way it was handled by the government during the years, people now, other than Indians, have built on this land, have homes, live on this land. What is to happen to them should the Indians get their way?
Well, they might pay some rent.
Yeah.
They might own the house that they built.
I think that the push now in the Indian world to get return of land is not for occupied developed land, but for federal lands that are not being used for the purpose that they were originally taken for, and return of land to the Indians in form of federal lands.
I see.
Elsewhere, not necessarily adjoining the reservation.
Yes, I think the Indians are being very reasonable about this.
All right, you're listening to WCAU Philadelphia. This is Dick Clayton, and we'll continue in a moment. I'd like to find out about the employment situation, whether Indians run into any trouble there getting jobs. We'll talk about that in a moment. And we'd also like you to pose some questions to our guests this morning, if you will. If you've got any feelings on this, well, call us and talk about it, will you? In Philadelphia, TE96790. In the suburbs, MO70500. In New Jersey, Woodlawn 35909. I have the feeling that you get a lot of sympathetic listeners in this area, and you will, to a great extent, I think, in the larger cities throughout the area, simply because these people are not affected truly by the situation. Now, you say there is a very, very little land that is now occupied. I have heard that there's some of the land, though, is, and these people would be dead set against anything like this, I would imagine.
I think, yes, that they're very threatened by this, especially in states like South Dakota, where there is a great deal of militancy. There is also a great deal of racism. Just recently on television, one of the, I guess it was the new district attorney or something like that appeared on a television show to refute the charge of racism in South Dakota. But I've been there.
Yeah.
I was in Wounded Knee very, very soon after the occupation of Wounded Knee as a reporter for a National Indian newspaper.
Yeah.
And I experienced something going into South Dakota that I experienced growing up. And that is that in Indian territory, there is a great deal of prejudice that non-Indians are really quite threatened by the Indians trying to reverse the situation.
All right, we'll get into more of this in a moment.
South Jersey in the winter of 1975, filled with the same...
All right, everyone, we'll continue now with our discussion concerning the Indian situation, along with some people representing the Indian Rights Association, Dr. Theodore Hetzel and Mrs. Betty Milley. Let's do that. We'll get to the phones in a moment. What about the employment situation? You say there is discrimination. You've seen discrimination.
I've seen discrimination. Last hired, first fired applies, I think, pretty generally in Indian Territory. Also, the fact that most reservations are in economically depressed areas of the country. There, I think, are more jobs for Indians today as Indians take over management of their own affairs and control of the monies allocated for specific programs on reservations. But there is this area of dispute among Indians as to developing the economy by building things on the reservation, factories and so forth. In some areas, this is really not a very feasible way of developing employment because our reservations are too small to absorb this kind of thing. But in other areas, it's absolutely essential because the reservations are so vast and transportation such a problem that building factories or whatever on reservations is really the only way of answering
well, concerning employment, are many of the younger contemporary Indians leaving the reservations, going out looking for employment in other places around the country, and are they doing this with any degree of success?
Well, that varies considerably. Often Indians leaving the reservation for urban areas don't have the skills required to get employment in urban areas, and so they find American Indian people in a ghetto kinds of situations in large American cities because they're at the low end of the economic scale. Some of our people have gone to cities and with a certain amount of education and have been fairly successful in making an adequate living, but it's almost universal among us that our idea is of living in the city is that it is a temporary thing and that we want to go back home again. People of my generation had difficulty in finding employment at home, and so we ended up in urban areas. But I think that we're gradually reversing that so that young people who are educated are wanted back home to help manage Indian affairs.
I agree with all Betty has said there, but I can bring it closer to home and quote some figures from the U.S. Census that in Philadelphia, the unemployment is 10%. I think that's higher than for other recognized groups.
Yes.
And nationwide, the unemployment would be much higher than that. The average median income for Philadelphia Indians for males is $5,876. For Sioux Indians, it's about two-thirds of that. For the Navajo, it's about a half of that. For the Papago, it's about a quarter of that. And for the Hopi, it's lower yet.
Well, why is that? Why
below
is
the poverty level for the family income.
Well, why is that? Because of what they've been subjected to in their particular area?
We've taken good land away from them and leave them with a little bit of the worst.
Yeah.
And you just can't make a dollar income on that kind of land. I remember being with Papago Indians when a worker for the Bureau of Indian Affairs said, "It's no use trying to help these people. You can't make any money down here." Of course, his idea was the purpose of life was to make money.
Yeah.
And the idea of the Papago is not that the purpose of life is to make money, but it's to subsist and to survive and to live where your friends are. So that they may have a low employment, in our terms, commercial employment. They may have a very low dollar income, but they survive.
Well, they're in a very bad area of the country.
desert. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, let's get to the phones and let's ask some of our listeners if they'll call in now. TE96790 in Philadelphia, the suburbs MO70500, New Jersey, Woodlawn 35909, and find out what some of their comments are or questions they may want to ask. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Can you tell me how your people are elected or selected, and isn't there some animosity when you move into a particular area of the local tribal officials who are elected by the local people in that community, that they feel that there is some outside agitators coming in and sort of taking over their prerogatives?
What do you think about that? That's an interesting question.
I can't say I really understand that.
Well, he feels that perhaps you move in or you come in and you try and assert some authority around a reservation somewhere. I'm sure all the Indians are probably aware of your
Yes, when he was troubled 2 years ago, wounded knee, some of the local tribal officials offered to help the United States government to go in there and get rid of the outside agitators like Mr. Banks and Mr. Means.
Well, are you saying, are you asking how different tribal governments are elected?
Yes, I'm asking how your executive branch, your officials, are you elected?
You may know that the Indian Rights Association.
Yes, who do you represent? Do you represent all 1 million Indians in the United States?
The Indian Rights
Association? No, you have a misconception entirely. If you apply it to the Indian Rights Association, which is an organization mostly of white people who try to keep in touch with Indians to understand their interests and to try to represent those interests to the general public and to improve
white
the
people
information.
Are
mostly white people
getting behind the scenes for Indian rights. Is that what you're saying?
We try to be helpful to Indians.
That's true.
With respect to their rights. We have nothing to do with the internal organization of tribal government.
Well, don't you think that these people who are duly elected by their own tribal councils and officials
are
more qualified to handle this situation?
Two ways of looking at that. The tribal elections are white man style, imposed upon the Indians by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The Indian way of running their own internal government is not that. They do not have elected democratic, so to speak, by majority rule. They've had their own systems, which we have abolished or overridden by imposing our system on them. And so
that's not quite true. I must interrupt you. A majority of tribal governments that have elected an election form of government have had their constitutions imposed on them during the Indian renewal in the 1930s.
34.
But as a member of the Seneca Nation, Seneca Republic, we have an elected election
very true.
Form
since
of government, too. But we've had ours since 1834. Yeah. We've had it for almost our constitution.
Do the Indians appreciate what the Indian Rights Association is doing?
I would say yes. Wherever I go, and I've been practically all the reservations and travel around, we get a good reception. I represent myself with my visiting card, which says I am with the Indian Rights Association.
Well, I think, quite frankly, the only Indians that most Americans are concerned with are American Indians. When you say Indian rights movement, I would prefer to hear American Indian rights movement, because they were the first Americans, and they still are.
Our interest is only in the Native Americans, correct, the Indians of the United States area. We don't take much of a stand with regard to Mexican or to Canadian Indians.
But your membership, you wouldn't want to say how many people are actively involved?
About 3,000, but they're mostly white people who are philanthropically concerned about the welfare of Indians.
Well, I find that hard to believe that 3,000 white Americans would be more concerned with the rights of 1 million American Indians than their own individual national, state, local...
Well, they could be. It is conceivable they're interested in both. I mean, and aren't they really
we're not
intertwined in a way, okay?
I think what you're saying is that you object to non-Indian support in the Indian movement. Well, since our census is very low, relatively, in the United States, we do need outside support in agitating for recognition of Indian rights in this country.
You're half of 1% of the population, and it's the poorest poorest group in the country.
What was your stand as far as the Indians holding it, let's say at Wounded Knee, holding land by force? I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a very complicated matter, because there are several ways of looking at it, and the Indian way of looking at it is that there is a treaty which says that that this is their land. They are a sovereign nation in their own eyes. It may not be in the eyes of the local district attorney and the National Guard in the United States, but their treaty says it hasn't been revoked.
All right, but
they deal with the President of the United States, and that they all the federal marshals were trespassing who were there. It was illegal, and the courts have recognized this. There's quite a bit of truth to it.
All right, but tell me this: what did the Indian Rights Association at the time? What does it now feel about that?
We took no stand because we felt that this was a matter of controversy between Indian groups, and we didn't know enough about it to want to get into something that was really an Indian internal affair.
So in fact, you were not there stimulating this?
No, we were hands-off.
All right.
But this agitation instigating sometimes can be a double-edged sword. At the very time when Indians need good friends among all races and all nationalities here in America, I think you just have to, sometimes you can cause more of a white backlash, so to speak, and you can actually cause your self-contributions and sympathetic supporters.
Yes, we're seeing that happen right now in areas where there has been occupation by Indian forces. We're certainly getting a reaction in New York State to that occupation. We're getting a reaction, a very, very violent reaction in Menominee Territory in Wisconsin.
Well, and at Onondaga.
Of course you would. There would be reaction. I mean, why wouldn't there? I mean, as long as the Indians stayed on their reservations and didn't insist on what they say are their...